Meister Sheni, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Aleph. L'yomar Adam l'chavero, a person may not say to his friend, Ha'al es ha'peros ha'elu l'Yerushalayim l'chalek. Bring up these foodstuffs, this fruit and vegetables, whatever it is, this produce to Yerushalayim, so that we divide it up, implying that for bringing it up, in exchange for your schlepping it, I will pay you with a part of the produce. Now, since that's economically what's happening, I'm saying, in exchange for your services, I will give you a portion of the Meister Sheni. What you're effectively doing is paying your obligations, your financial obligations, with Meister Sheni. It's your obligation to bring it up. You're getting someone else to do work for you, and you're paying for someone else's labor with your Meister Sheni. And that's forbidden. Meister Sheni can only be used for food and drink and for anointing. And that being the case, it's usur. However, Ela Omerlo, what a person could say is, Ha'alem shenochlem v'nishtem b'Yerushalayim. Why don't you bring it up so we can eat and drink this stuff together in Yerushalayim? That's perfectly fine, because you're not paying him. You're inviting him to participate in your food, and that's perfectly fine. And similarly, a person in general can give a gift with nothing in exchange expected to his friend if that gift is Meister Sheni. We actually said this previously in the first mission of the first parak. The same thing. The bartender gave two pshatim. He said the simplest pshat is we're talking about inviting someone over to have as, like, say, a dinner guest. He can eat the food with you, and that's no problem at all. It's giving him a free gift. If it's okay to simply give someone a straight-out gift in a conventional sense of Meister Sheni, that is actually dependent on machlokas and whether one considers a gift, a matana, to be a mecher, equivalent to being a transaction or a sale. If you hold that it is equivalent to actually selling something to someone, so then gifting would be forbidden because you cannot sell Meister Sheni. But if you consider a mecher and a gift to be distinct things, and a gifting a matana is not a mecher, not a sale, then you could be able to. In any case, we'll stick to the bartender's pshat, and he points you to the fact that he said this once before in the first parak, first Mishnah. Meister Sheni, Parak Gimel, Mishnah Base, 3-2. Englochen Truma Bechesef Meister Sheni. You're not allowed to use your Meister Sheni money that you brought to Yerushalayim, even if you're a Kohen, to purchase foodstuffs that are Truma. Mipnei Shehu Memat Bechilaso, because that actually reduces its consumption. What does that mean? So, first of all, we've emphasize the point in a number of Mishnayos how the Chazal wanted you to get value for money. They wanted you not to waste your Meister Sheni. And we've also established previously in other Masechtas, Truma, etc., that the going price for Truma produce is actually less than the going price for Chulin produce because fewer people want Truma. Why do fewer people want it? Because only Kohanim can eat Truma, and not only is there fewer people demanding Truma, also even Kohanim would prefer not to have Truma because they can only eat it when they're Tahor, and the Truma itself is susceptible to becoming Tummy. So for all those reasons, people don't necessarily want Truma, and because of supply and demand, there's lots of supply, little demand, so therefore the price would go down. So you'd think that'd be a great thing to do. The problem is, here the Mishnah says that there'll be fewer people ready to consume this Truma, and therefore you've essentially made the Meister Sheni like less consumable. That's for two reasons, kind of the reasons we just laid out. The first is because if you are Tamei, you can't eat Truma. Now you might say, wait a second, if you're Tamei, you can't eat Meister Sheni either. And that's true. However, if you recall, Meister Sheni is Chulin, meaning it's only susceptible to becoming a Sheni Latuma, whereas Truma can become even a Shlish Latuma. And that means that a person who's a Tful Yom, someone went to the mikveh that day because he was Tamei, let's say he was a Zav, whatever, many things, any real Tuma. So when he goes to the mikveh, he is a Tful Yom, and that makes him a Sheni Latuma, which means for the rest of the day, until three stars come out at night, he may eat Meister Sheni, but he may not eat Truma. So you see it's more susceptible to Truma, fewer eaters, and that being the case, the Chazal say no. The second reason why it's reduced the number of people who would consume is because only Kohanim can eat Truma, whereas when it comes to Meister Sheni, anybody can eat Meister Sheni. That being the case, the Chazal say you should not purchase use your Meister Sheni money to purchase Truma. Rabbi Shimon Mater. Rabbi Shimon says, yes, you could. This is consistent with Rabbi Shimon throughout Kol Torah Kula. He's always lenient regarding the issue of if there'd be less potential for consumption, he still lets. Now, normally that's an old fight. He wouldn't bring it up again here and make a point of it. However, he sticks to his guns in this case because, as he makes the following argument, there's a great reason to think that even if you don't hold under normal circumstances that you should agree with Rabbi Shimon that it's not such a big deal if there's fewer people to consume something, like say for Korbanos, here when it comes to Meister Sheni, you for sure, says Rabbi Shimon, should be allowed to eat Truma because if you recall, what's the ideal use for Meister Sheni money? It's to purchase shlamim and bring them as karbanos, as a shlamim. So shlamim are even more restricted as kadshim than regular truma. And that's what Rabbi Shimon says. He says, Amar lehem, Shimon, ma im hekel bezivche shlamim shu mevi'in lidei pigul v'noser v'tameh. He says, listen, if already you're going to be makel and say your Meister Sheni money can be used to purchase shlamim, korbanos, and those are really susceptible to becoming to pigul. Pigul is something altogether different. Pigul is when a person does one of the four essential avodos of a korban, that is the shechita, the slaughter of the animal, the kabbalah, receiving the blood, the holacha, the bring it to mizbeach, and the zrika, the splashing on the mizbeach. Those four steps, if a person has in mind during any of those four steps that he's going to eat this korban or offered on the fire beyond the requisite time, when you're allowed to do so, that thought itself ruins the korban. It's called pigul. In any case, the point is, you could buy an animal, give it to a kohen, and he could be mfagelet, he could ruin it in this way. Also, venosar, there's a time limit when it comes to shlamim. A shlamim is only good basically for the day you bring it, and the next day, by the following nightfall, you can't eat shlamim that are anymore. It becomes nosar, it's leftovers, and it has to be burned. So you see, there's a very short window of time. And yet again, Rabbi Shimon points out, you're allowed to buy shlamim with that short window of time with your Meister Sheni money. And also v'tame. A person who is tame can't eat kachem. Now, of course, you can't eat truma either, but the standard is even higher, meaning kachem can become even a ravi'i, whereas truma can just be a shlishi. Okay, so for all those reasons, lo nakel b'truma, should we not be lenient and allow you to use your Meister Sheni money to purchase truma? Amrulo, they said no, they don't buy it. Because ma im hekel bezivche shlamim, yeah, they're lenient when it comes to purchasing shlamim korbanos. That's shehen mutarim lazarim, because everybody can eat a shlamim, both kohen and non-kohen, a zar is a non-kohen. Nakel betruma shehi asur lazarim, should we allow you to buy truma foods with your Meister Sheni money, where only a kohen can eat it, and there's very, you know, a small supply of kohanim potentially. In other words, when it comes to shlamim, it's a free barbecue for anyone who wants to participate. You won't have a hard time finding your neighbors who want to eat your barbecue with you. When it comes to truma, you're only limited to kohanim. And you know what? Kohanim, it may be free food, but kohanim might be stuffed during the holiday because of all the shlamim they're getting fed, for example, right? They have so much food, they get chaza and shok on every single shlamim. And that being the case, and they might just not be willing or able to eat your truma and will go to waste. So the halacha follows the chacham shita here that it's forbidden to buy truma with Meister Sheni money. Meister Sheni, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Gimel, 3:3. Misha hayulo ma'os biYerushalayim. Let's say a person had his Meister Sheni money and he's in Yerushalayim already, but that money he needs in his pocket, which has the kedusha and the restrictions of Meister Sheni money, he needs to purchase something other than foodstuffs. Let's say, for example, he's in the mall in Yerushalayim and it's cold and he wants to buy a sweater. Well, you can't buy a sweater with Meister Sheni money. So what can he do? V'sarech lehem, he needs that money. If v'lachavero peros, if he has a friend nearby who has food, which is chulin food, in other words, he's in the mall and he sees his friend sitting down to a delicious steak, and that steak was a chulin steak, he can ask his friend for a favor. He can say, listen, omer lachavero. He can say to his friend, Hareha ma'osa elu mechulalin al perosecha. I'm going to deconsecrate my Meister Sheni money. I'm going to put it on the food that you're eating, and that will allow me to use my money for whatever I want, because it's deconsecrated, and you will just have to eat your steak that has now been invested with Meister Sheni Kedusha, b'tahara. That's what the Mishnah says. Nimtza, it'll come out. Ze elchol perosav b'tahara. This guy will eat his food b'tahara, the steak and the story I told. Vahala, as for the guy with the money, oset tzarko b'mosav. He now can use his money to buy that sweater. V'lo yomar kein la'am ha'aretz. There is a limit here. You, the guy with the money, can't speak to your friend who's eating the steak if that guy is an Am Haaretz. And the reason why is because we're talking about an Am Haaretz who isn't Ne'eman regarding Tahara. He's not trusted regarding keeping things Tahor. Even though he's an honest guy and he's a well-meaning guy and he's a big, great guy, your friend Am Haaretz. The problem is the lachas of Tumah are just too complicated, and we assume that someone who's an Am Haaretz who's not formally makpid on keeping Tumah and Tahara will inevitably make a mistake, sit down on a chair he thought was tar, which was really a midras chair, let's say, and make some tummy, whatever the story is. Since he thinks he's tar, but he's wrong, so he will eat the Meister Sheni in a state of tuma, perhaps, and that being the case, it's usher, it's like lifnei iver, you can't give it to him. Ela b'damai, unless, we're talking about demine. Now, make a little note to yourself in the Mishnayos. It's not what the words mean necessarily. You might be misled. It means if the money that you're using that has the Maaser Sheni Kedusha on it was used to redeem demai produce. What's demai produce? Produce that was purchased by an from an Amaretz back home, out of Yerushalayim. And that food, the Amaretz said, was tithed properly, but you're just not sure. So you tithe it again, misafik, because the rule is, when it comes to Amaretz, you can't assume they tithe it correctly, and therefore you have to tithe it again to take Maaser Sheni. That's just suffik Maaser Sheni, and most Amaretz, in fact, even do it correctly. So this just is a chumrah that was required by the rabbis, but here we will allow you to give that Maaser Sheni money, that money that was used to redeem Maaser Sheni demai, and deconsecrate it onto the Amaretz's food. That's no problem, because that we will trust Amaretz to do right. The stakes should start that high, because it's only a derabanan chumrah in the first place, because the Maaser Sheni probably didn't need to be taken from this demai in the first place. Maaser Sheni, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Dalet, 3-4. Peres b'Yerushalayim u'ma'os b'medina. What happens if the food you want to eat is in Yerushalayim, but the money that has the Kedushas Maaser Sheni is back home, outside of Yerushalayim? Meaning, you had money that had Maaser Sheni Kedusha on it, but you forgot to bring it with you to Yerushalayim, let's say. But now you want to eat, and you want to eat the food in Yerushalayim with the sanctity of Maaser Sheni. So no problem. Omer, you can simply say, Hareha Ma'osahem, the money over there, back home, outside of Yerushalayim, which has Kedushas Maaser Sheni, Mechulalim al Peros Ha'elu, are deconsecrated, meaning that the Kedusha transfers to this food. And that's going to work. The chiddush being, there's no reason why the money and the food have to be in the same place for the chilul to work. It can be done at a great distance. No problem at all. Similarly, now we're going to have the flip case where ma'os b'Yerushalayim, you have your money in Yerushalayim, your kedushas Maaser Sheni money in Yerushalayim. Uperos b'medina, but the food that you want to eat is actually outside of Yerushalayim. So then you similarly can do the same thing and say, Hare ha'ma'os ha'elu, the money I have here in my hand in Yerushalayim that has Kedushas Maaser Sheni, mechulalin, are deconsecrated al peros ha'em, onto that food over there that's outside of Yerushalayim. Meaning, you've got, I don't know, what your kid went to pick up a pizza, and you want the pizza to be consecrated with your Maaser Sheni money, and the kids are bringing the pizza from outside the walls of Yerushalayim. You can say, listen, the money I have in my hand deconsecrated in that pizza, and it's going to come to me later on. Says the Mishnah, ubilvad, that's okay, provided that, sheyalu haperos v'yechalu b'Yerushalayim. You have to bring the food up to Yerushalayim to eat it inside the walls, because of course the rule is that all Maaser Sheni must be eaten inside Yerushalayim. But the chiddush of the Mishnah is that when it comes to food, the food, once in Yerushalayim, can never leave. But if you have the money in Yerushalayim, you can use it to transfer on food, still kedusha onto food, outside of Yerushalayim. Again, provided that you bring it back and eat that food in Yerushalayim. Maaser Sheni, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Hey, 3-5. Ma'os nichnasos Yerushalayim v'yotzos. The rule is that Maaser Sheni money, that is say money that had the Kedusha Maaser Sheni redeemed onto it, can go into Yerushalayim, and you can leave Yerushalayim within your pocket. There's no problem whatsoever. You'll bring it back next time. However, uperos nichnasin ve'enin yotzin. When it comes to food that has Kedushas Maaser Sheni, we say the walls of Yerushalayim are koltos, they like absorb, they hold them in. And that being the case, the halacha is once you bring food that has Kedushas Maaser Sheni into the walls of Yerushalayim, it's forbidden to take them out. And that is the din. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, he's going to disagree. He says, afa peros nichnasos ve'yotzin. He says, even peros Maaser Sheni can go out and in of the walls of Yerushalayim. However, even according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it's not at all what it sounds like. It's very limited. All he's saying is that in the event that you want to take your peros Maaser Sheni out of the walls of Yerushalayim to have them processed outside, meaning, let's say that the ovens or the grinding mills, whatever the story is, are more available out of Yerushalayim, there's shorter lines, there's more access to these things and so on, he allows you to take that food to be processed outside of the walls, provided that after you process it, you bring it back into Yerushalayim. So he is simply just giving you an allowance to take the food out for the express sole purpose of processing it out of Yerushalayim to bring it back in. However, the halacha does not follow Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Halacha is like the Tana Kama, that you may not take Peros Maaser Sheni out of Yerushalayim once it's entered the walls. Maaser Sheni, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Vav, 3-6. The Mishnah just finished saying that Maaser Sheni produce, that is to say, fruit that has the kedusha of Maaser Sheni, once going into Yerushalayim, cannot be taken out. It has to be eaten over there. It cannot be redeemed anymore. The question our Mishnah considers is, what happens if you have tevel, that is to say, produce that hasn't been tithed at all? So it has the latent requirement to have tithes, including Maaser Sheni, to be removed from it. If that tevel is taken into Yerushalayim, but the Maaser Sheni hasn't been separated, hasn't been identified, hasn't been declared, does that latent Maaser Sheni itself have the requirement to be eaten in Yerushalayim? Meaning, is it possible to take that tevel out of Yerushalayim and to separate the Maaser Sheni outside and then redeem it outside and never bring that particular foodstuff back inside? That's the Mishnah's question. We're going to have machlokas beis Hillel and beis Shammai, but we're going to have two versions of that machlokas. Let me say this Mishnah outside very briefly first, then I'll do it more slowly inside to make sure that the structure is clear. The question again is, may tevel be taken outside of Yerushalayim and not bring that Maaser Sheni back, or does the Maaser Sheni always need to be eaten in Yerushalayim once brought in, even if it's in tevel, and therefore you'd have to bring that Maaser Sheni back? So the first version of the machlokas between beis Hillel and beis Shammai is that beis Shammai says it always needs to be taken back, whereas Beis Hillel says it depends. If it had Gemar Malacha, it must be brought back inside. If it didn't have Gemar Malacha, then it need not be brought back inside. And the second version of the Machlokas, between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, is that Beis Hillel says it never needs to be brought back, as if it was Tevel when it was in Yerushalayim, and Beis Shammai says it depends. If it had reached Gemar Malacha, so then it must be brought back, but if not, then it doesn't need to be. Okay, I'm going to unpack that more slowly now. The Mishnah says inside, Peros shenigma malachtan v'avru besoch Yerushalayim. If you have produce for which the production has been completed, meaning the processing of that produce is done, it reached Gemar Malacha, as we defined in Maseches Maaseros, etc. So, yachzor maaser sheni shelahen v'yachal b'Yerushalayim. Once it was brought into Yerushalayim, even if you take it out again, the maaser sheni component itself, those very grapes that you had brought in, that you were intending to eat as grapes, as opposed to pressing into wine, and therefore they had Gemar Malacha. If you bring those grapes in as tevel and you take them out of Yerushalayim and you separate the Maaser Sheni there, outside of Yerushalayim, you must bring the Maaser Sheni grapes, those very grapes, back into Yerushalayim to eat. You can't redeem those grapes anymore because they once were inside of Yerushalayim. V'shelo nigmar malachtan, the Mishnah says, however, if the produce we're talking about didn't have Gemar Malacha, like for example, the grapes we're talking about here were grapes you intended to press into wines. They weren't completed at the time they were brought into Yerushalayim. And the Mishnah gives examples like that. Sali Anavim, you have a basket of grapes. Lagas, that you're intending to press into wine. Or Sali to Einim, you have baskets of figs that you weren't planning on eating as raw figs, but rather Lamukze, you were intending to bring it out to be dried out on the roof somewhere to make dried figs. Therefore, Gemar Malacha hadn't happened for these types of produce. So then Beis Shammai Omrim Yachzer El Maaser Sheni Shelahem Yachla B'Yerushalayim. Beis Shammai says it doesn't matter, Gemar Malacha, not Gemar Malacha, they have to be brought back in, the Maaser Sheni components, and eaten in Yerushalayim, you can't redeem it anymore. But Beis Hillel Omrim, and Beis Hillel say, since these didn't have Gemar Malacha yet, Yipada V'Yachla B'chol Makom, you could eat them, you could redeem the Maaser Sheni elsewhere, and put onto coins, or eat the Maaser Sheni wherever you want. Excuse me. You could take those grapes that were Maaser Sheni, once you identify them as such, as Maaser Sheni, and you can redeem that onto coins and eat those grapes that have been deconsecrated wherever you want outside of Yerushalayim. That's the first version of the Machlokas. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Omer, Mishem Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda says the name of Yossi. Lo nechlugu beis Shammai beis Hillel al perish l'nigma malachtan. He says, no, they never had a Machlokas when it came to beis Shammai and beis Hillel never had a Machlokas when it came to produce that hadn't yet reached Gemar Malacha. Unlike the first version where beis Shammai still required it to come back. Here, according to Rabbi Shimon Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yossi, everyone agrees that if it didn't reach Gemar Malacha, she'ipada v'maaser sheni shelahem v'yachal b'chol makom, that you could redeem it, you could take it out of Yerushalayim, you could take the maaser sheni there out of Yerushalayim and redeem it onto coins and eat those very fruits that once had been in Yerushalayim. Now that they're deconsecrated, you can eat them outside of Yerushalayim. V'alma nechlechu, according to him, what was the machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai? Al perish nigmar malachtan, that you're talking about fruit that had already been fully processed, at which point, Beis Shammai omrim yachzer maaser sheni shelahem v'yachal b'Yerushalayim. Beis Shammai says, in such a case, and in only such a case, must you bring those very
foodstuffs back into Yerushalayim. Ubeisil omrim, yipad v'yachal mokom mokom. Beisil says, no, it's never the case that we look at the Ma'aser Sheni as sort of been identified when it's in Yerushalayim. And that being the case, whether it was Gmar Malacha or not Nigmar Malacha, you can take those foodstuffs out of Yerushalayim and redeem them over there. The halacha is going to follow the first version, the Tanakhama, of course, according to Beis Hillel, which will mean that if the question is, do we look at Tevel that was in Yerushalayim, as so to speak, as already having been tied, then we've identified where the Ma'aser Sheni is, which can't be taken out. So Beis Hillel says, it depends. If there has Gmar Malacha been reached, then you may not take it out. And if Gmar Malacha hasn't been reached, then you indeed could take those very foodstuffs out and tie them outside of Yerushalayim and eat. And once you redeem the Ma'aser Sheni onto coins, eat that very fruit that had been Yerushalayim outside of Yerushalayim. Ma'aser Sheni, Per Gimel, Mishnah Zayin 3:7. We've seen that there's ultimately a chumrah and a kula, both a stringency and a leniency with respect to Ma'aser Sheni, both inside of Yerushalayim and outside of Yerushalayim. That is to say, when Ma'aser Sheni produce has not yet entered Yerushalayim, we say there's a leniency in as much as you can redeem the Kedusha onto coins and eat those produce outside of Yerushalayim. But there's a stringency, which is that the Ma'aser Sheni food itself, before you redeem it, cannot be eaten. It has to be brought into Yerushalayim. On the other hand, once you bring the food into Yerushalayim, there's a leniency in as much as the food can be eaten, but there's a stringency in as much as the food can no longer be redeemed onto coins. So our mission is going to consider the question about the borderline case. The borderline case is, it's going to talk about a fruit tree, and although normally the rule is that if you have tree and fruit on the tree, the fruit is considered to be subordinate to the tree, and the rule would generally be, under most circumstances, that the fruit status goes after the trunk, the root of the tree. The question is that true in our case? What happens if you have a tree that's in Yerushalayim, meaning the trunk is in Yerushalayim, but the branches lean over the wall and the fruit is outside the walls? Or vice versa, you have a tree growing outside Yerushalayim, but the branches are leaning over and the fruit is inside the walls of Yerushalayim. So how do we treat that fruit? So the Mishnah's answer very briefly is going to be that in this case, we want the fruit per se. We want to know if the fruit has entered Yerushalayim, if the walls of Yerushalayim have, so to speak, been collected, have like absorbed, have taken a hold of the fruit. And it doesn't matter where the trunk is. If the fruit is in, it's in. If the fruit is out, it's out. That's the basic gist of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, inside, ilan, if you have a tree, shehu omed bifnim, it is standing, meaning its trunk is inside Yerushalayim, the walls. Venota lechutz, but it's draping over the walls, out of the walls, such that you have fruit outside the walls of Yerushalayim. So that apple or whatever it is that's outside the walls, despite the fact that its trunk is inside. Oh, or the flip side, omen mechutz, you have the tree growing outside the walls of Yerushalayim. Venota lefnim, but the fruit is leaning inside. So the Mishnah says, all that matters is where the fruit is. Mekenegad achoma v'lifnim, if the fruit is already directly over the wall or inside the walls, kilifnim, we treat it strictly as if it were inside. Mekenegad achoma v'lechutz kilechutz, if it's directly over the wall or not yet inside, it's outside the walls, then we will treat it as if it were outside. So it can go strict both ways depending on. And of course, if it's on the line, it'll be strict both ways, meaning neither redeem it nor eat it. Okay, that's the halacha. Similarly, batei habadim, if you have an olive press where you make olive oil, shepischein lifnim, v'chalal lechutz, the normal way was to use the wall itself of the city, the infrastructure of the wall itself, to be part of the press. And that being the case, a lot of times you'd have the entrance to the press be inside the city, but yet the actual components of the press, like where things are happening, could be on the other side, meaning it actually, in fact, is on the other side of the wall. So what do we do with the olive oil that's coming out of that press? Or similarly, osha pischein lechutz, if for whatever reason the entrance way to this wine press stood on the outside of the walls, v'chalalan lifnim, but the cavity in which the press is happening actually is occurring within the geographic border of the city, inside the walls, if you look from like a bird's eye view above. Beishamai omrim hakol kelifnim. Beishamai says in both cases, doesn't matter. We treat such a press as being within the walls of the city. Since either it enters or exits that way, we treat it as part of the city and inside the city, and that will mean that once that any oil there can't be taken out of the city, can't be redeemed, and Ma'aser Sheni be eaten outside the city, nope, that very Ma'aser Sheni must stay there. And actually, this would have farther reaching ramifications because there are other rules that apply to just inside the walls of Yerushalayim, and most notably the requirement to eat all kachim kalim, karbanos, that are eaten inside that are eaten, for example, a Korban Pesach or Shlamim, etc., those have to be eaten inside of Yerushalayim, and therefore we're going to say, according to Beis Shammai, that those could be eaten inside the wine press, even though you're actually, like, from a bird's eye view above, outside the walls, but since you're inside the cavity of the wine press, which enters into the city, you indeed could eat that those Kachim Kalim, those Korbanos over there, etc. And Beis Hillel says, no, Mekeneged HaChoma V'lefnim K'lefnim, Mekeneged HaChoma L'chutz K'lechutz. It just the same as the tree notion, meaning wherever the fruit is relative to the walls, that's the answer to your question. If the doesn't matter that the cavity opens into the city or the press is out of the city. So meaning whatever olive and olive oils are outside the walls of the city are considered to be outside, even though the entrance to the press is inside the city. And similarly, whatever olives and olive oil are inside the city, they are considered inside the city, notwithstanding the fact that the entrance to this press is from the outside of the city. And the halacha would, of course, follow Beis Hillel.
Ma'aser Sheni, Per Gimel, Mishnah Ches, 3:8. The previous Mishnah had discussed the borders of what's considered the city of Yerushalayim within the Chom of the walls, and what happens if you have an entrance from one side, but the cavity extends beyond the wall on the other side, etc. That would have nafkminas not just to where one could eat Ma'aser Sheni, but also where he could eat Kachim Kalim, etc., like a Korban Pesach, could eat the Korban Pesach, which must be eaten inside the walls of Yerushalayim in such a cavity which crosses over the boundary from the outside. This Mishnah here goes off topic, the topic of Ma'aser Sheni and the borders of Yerushalayim proper, to discuss similar questions that relate to the sanctity and parameters, the definition of what's considered the Azara, the temple courtyard, as the Mishnah sometimes refers to it as Ben HaKilayim, between the curtains, as it was in the time of the Mishkan. So within the temple complex, there was the Har HaBayis, the mountain, and after Herod rebuilt it, it was a very large open area. Surrounded by like a colonnade on all sides, like pillars, and many people could gather there on top of the Har HaBayis. It would be today where the other side of the Kotel, other side of the Kotel Maravi, the western wall, is where that Har HaBayis area begins, etc. And you can still see it today if you stand from, let's say, overlooking the Kotel area. You see the Kotel is the western side, goes all the way, you know, about 500 meters along the western side. But you can see the southern wall as well. Those are the boundaries of the walls around the Har HaBayis. And the area up there, while it has certain sanctity, and in fact, people are not cavalier about going up there even today because of various Asurim, it wasn't as kadosh, as sanctified as the Azara, the temple courtyard itself, which would include the areas like the Ezra's Nashim, where they did, let's say, for example, the menorahs were, and the people would gather, if you recall, like, for example, in the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, etc. And then further back, there was the Ezra's Yisrael and Ezra's Kohanim, this area where the actual temple, the Heichal, the building existed, etc., and the time in the Mizbeach, and so on. So our question here is, what defines the Azara, as opposed to the Har HaBayis? The Azara will be referred to here as Kodesh, as opposed to the Har HaBayis, which will be referred to as Chol. And the reason why is because only in the Azara area may one eat kache kachim, korbanos that are divided, you know, all sacrificial offerings are divided into two categories, kache kachim, which include the ola, which is not eaten, as well as the chatas and asham, which are eaten, and also menachos, meal offerings, those are eaten. So those only can be eaten inside the Azara area by the Kohanim, so we need to understand exactly where they are, and there are plenty of other Asurim as well that govern the Azara. For example, one who enters the Azara in a state of Tumah is Chayav Karis, and that's why people are very wary about going on the Har HaBayis today. One of the reasons is because, God forbid, they would cross over that line into where the Azara was, that would be a Chayav Karis, which we don't want to do, of course. So here our mission is going to define exactly the border of the Azara, and it's going to consider what happens if, just like the previous Mishnah, you have structures which straddle the border, where part of the structure perhaps is on one side, or the entrance on one side, and the other side has the other half of the building, or the other entrance, etc., etc. So the Mishnah says, Halishkos benuyos bekodesh psuchos lachol. If you have a structure, a lishka is like a chamber, that, and there were many chambers that went around the perimeter of the Azara,
if you have one that was built in the Kodesh side, meaning in the Azara proper, but Upsuchos Lachol, the entrance to that chamber came from the Harabayas side, up the Chael, as it's called, and you're coming from the Harabayas. So then, Tochan Chol V'Gogosein Kodesh. We will say that the inside of the chamber, since its access way is from the outside, meaning from the Chol, from the Harabayas side of things, the inside of the chamber also remains Chol, even though from a bird's eye view, you sort of speak inside the rectangle, which would be the Azara, but since the entrance of that particular chamber you're standing in is from the Harabayas, the Chol side, that chamber has a status of Chol, so one, for example, could not eat Chatas inside that chamber. The roof, however, directly above that space, so that would be Kodesh, because you're not in the chamber, you're sort of on it, and you're in the Azara. An important Tara here. Chazal say that the rooftops and top of the walls were not sanctified, which would mean that under normal circumstances, if you're standing on the roof of a building, even if the building was Kodesh, for argument's sake, so above it, you're already out of the Kodesh area, out of Yerushalayim, out of the Harabayas, out of the Azara, whatever is relevant. However, our case here in this Mishnah, as the Bartender understands it, is where the Harabayas is a mountain, and therefore you're building into a slope, and you could have it that the rooftop of a particular chamber is flush with the ground level of the Azara. And that being the case, since you're standing on the ground level of the Azara, and you happen to have a Lishka, a chamber directly beneath you, then, really and only then, would the rooftop, since it's flush with the ground of the Azara, would have the status of the Azara as well. I'm unaware of any structure like that in the Beis HaMikdash as Herod built it, but I'm an expert in it, so it could be there was actually a practical set up like that, even in the basic English drawings, is the post-Herodian construction. Okay, the Mishnah continues and says, the other way around, Tochan Kodesh, if you're talking about the inside, I'm sorry, Benuyas Bechol Upsuchan Lekodesh, if the structure, the chamber was built on the Chol side, meaning on the Harabayas side of the line, but Upsuchos Lekodesh, but the entrance way to this structure is on the Kodesh side, meaning coming in from the Azara. So then Tochan Kodesh, then it has the status of its entrance area, meaning it's going to be Kodesh also as part of the Azara. V'gogosein Chol, but directly above it is Chol, because then anyways, directly above it, you're out of the Azara, you're in the Harabayas. Now the obvious question is, what happens if you have both Benuyos B'Kodesh U'V'Chol? What happens if the chamber straddles the line? Half of it is in the Kodesh side, meaning the Azara, and half of it is in the Chol side, meaning the Harabayas. Upsuchos Lekodesh V'Lechol, and you have entrances from both sides. You can get in from the Harabayas or get in from the Azara. So that sounds like a strange construction, but actually there was such a structure on the Harabayas slash Azara like that, called the Beis HaMokad, which is the chamber of fire, I'll translate it very loosely, and the bonfire place, and that was essentially the dormitory of the Kohanim who were living on the Harabayas and doing their abode over there. So that structure straddled the line, and half of it was in the Kodesh, Azara, and half was in the Chol. And there's a Mishnah in, it had four like kind of chambers on the inside in the central living area where they had like dormitories, like kind of bunk beds and a big fire to keep them warm, hence the name, the Beis HaMokad, the fire, bonfire place. So the Mishnah there in Maseches Midos, in the first parak Mishnah Vav, talks about how there's Rosh Paspas, and there's some kind of like dividing lines, either columns that come down according to the Tiferes Tzur, or like Rosh, there's a like wooden kind of pegs coming out of the ground that would demark which half of the interior of that chamber was on the Kodesh side, and which of the half of the interior was the Chol side, because they would live there, but you can't sit down, so they can't sleep in the Azara, and therefore then if the sleeping part would be on the Chol side, and they would do things like there was a chamber there for making the Lechem Hapanim, one of the chambers, and also for keeping the sheep that were part of the Badika there in the Lishkos HaTalim for the 4 days checking before bringing Korban Tamid. That was on the Kodesh side. On the Chol side, they had essentially one room dedicated for the old stones of the Mizbeach that were defiled by the Greeks, way back in the Hanukkah story. And then they also had the Lishkos Beis HaMokad, which was the dormitory where they could sleep. It also had there like a fireplace to keep them warm, as well as an entrance way to get to the mikvah, etc. The bathroom facility they had arranged and so on. So anyways, the point is it was half and half, exactly as we describe in our Mishnah here. So the Mishnah says, being that it has entrances from both sides and it straddles both sides, so then the actual thing is structured in half, which means if it's benuyas b'kodesh uvachol, if it's built on both kodesh and chol, meaning azara and harabayis, upsuchos l'kodesh v'chol, and has entrances both from the kodesh side, the azara, and from the chol, the harabayis side, as in fact the Beis Hamoka did, then tochan b'gago sein, both inside and the rooftop of it, mekeneged kodesh l'kodesh, kodesh, whatever's directly on the, you know, on the inside of the dotted line, so to speak, of the azara, that is considered to be kodesh, mekeneged achol v'lachol l'chol. And the part that is on the outside of the dotted line, if you will, towards the harabayis, that side has a status of chol. And therefore the kohanim, for example, would have to eat on the one side of the line toward on the azara half, and they would sleep on the other half, for example. Eat korbanos, like the chatas and asham, etc. Ma'aser Sheni, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Tes, 3:9. We've established already that once Ma'aser Sheni foodstuffs enter into Yerushalayim, so there's no longer the ability to redeem it onto a coin. That must happen before you come in, and that's a din d'oraisa. The Torah doesn't allow you to redeem onto coins once you've made it to Yerushalayim. We also learned that the food that was brought into Yerushalayim can't be taken out of Yerushalayim, even temporarily, even briefly, and that is a din d'rabanan, of the walls being koltos, of them sort of absorbing and taking hold of the food. So once it's brought in as Ma'aser Sheni, it can't be taken out. That's a din d'rabanan. Amish is going to say an important additional rule. What if the Ma'aser Sheni that you bring into Yerushalayim becomes tame? So you can't eat it because it's forbidden to eat Ma'aser Sheni that's tame. So now we're going to learn that one may redeem the kedusha off of that Ma'aser Sheni onto a coin, and then transfer it elsewhere and eat the next foodstuff. And the original Ma'aser Sheni that was brought in now is deconsecrated and is just regular chulin. The question is, once it's been downgraded to being regular chulin, unconsecrated food, may one take that deconsecrated food, which had been Ma'aser Sheni, out of the Yerushalayim, or is it now stuck there? So the Mishnah says, Ma'aser Sheni shenichnes Yerushalayim v'nitma. You brought Ma'aser Sheni into Yerushalayim, and it became tummy. So it doesn't matter, first Beis Shammai speaks, bein shenitma ba'ava tuma, bein shenitma ba'vlada tuma, doesn't matter if it became tummy. According to the Bartanura, av means any d'oraisa source of tuma, like a nida, zav, zava, shechvazera, sheret, etc. Or if it's a vlad hatuma, the Bartanura here learns that vlad hatuma in this case means any rabbinic tuma source, like, for example, a kli that became tummy from a liquid, or hands that hadn't been washed, etc. So those are only tuma sources midurabanan. Beis Shammai says it doesn't matter. If it became tummy, whether from a d'oraisa or a durabanan source, bein bifnim, Beim b'chutz. It doesn't matter if the Ma'aser Sheni became tamei b'chutz, which is outside of Yerushalayim before it came into Yerushalayim. So when it was brought in, it already was tamei and couldn't be eaten there. Or b'fnei, meaning it had been brought in, and at the time it was brought in, the walls grabbed a hold of it, so to speak, and it had to be, it was legitimate Ma'aser Sheni for consumption, but then it became tamei, so now you can't eat it. Beis Shammai is going to say in all those cases, yipadeh, you must redeem it. But it must remain inside Yerushalayim. We don't want the food that's been deconsecrated to be taken out of Yerushalayim. And although he'll give an exception in a moment, his basic rationale is that people will get confused, and you know, a son will say, so to speak, this is me talking, a son will say, I saw my father bring Ma'aser Sheni in, and I saw him take it home with us again, the very same Ma'aser Sheni he brought in. So people will misconstrue the din, and the truth of the matter had only been that when he brought it in, it was tahor, and when he brought it out, it was tamei and deconsecrated, no longer Ma'aser Sheni, but the onlooker may not know that. So therefore, Beis Shammai is concerned, and therefore he requires that all Ma'aser Sheni that's brought into Yerushalayim, even if it becomes tamei and deconsecrated, must stay in Yerushalayim and be consumed over there. Chutz, he has one exception, Mishen nitma ba'ava tuma b'chutz. If it became tame mid'oraisa by something prior to being brought in Yerushalayim, meaning so the Ma'aser Sheni became tame, it touched a dead rat, it already was tame, and it could never be eaten as Ma'aser Sheni, and then you bring that into Yerushalayim. So there, in that one example, Beis Shammai is lenient and says the walls never took hold in the first place, and a person could take those out, and what was going on would be evident to other onlookers, I assume. So that being the case, Beis Shammai says the rule is once brought into Yerushalayim, it can't be left. The exception is if it had been tamei by an av hatuma prior to being brought in, then it could be taken out once it's deconsecrated. Beis Hillel takes the opposite extreme, and he's going to say you can bring it out again under normal circumstances. He says, Beis Hillel omrim, hakol yipadeh v'yachal b'chutz. Everything can be redeemed once it becomes tamei, and then it can be eaten b'chutz, meaning you can take it outside of Yerushalayim. He's not concerned about Beis Shammai's concern about people getting confused, really. But Beis Hillel also has an exception. Chutz, his exception is, Mishenitma bevlad hatuma bifnim. If the way that this Maaser Sheni became tummy was by coming into contact with some sort of rabbinic source of tumma, so really midorais that's still tower and could be eaten in Yerushalayim, but the rabbi said no. In such a case, when it came in and it was totally, the walls took hold of it, it had to stay there. Now, they're abundant, we can't eat it, and we're redeeming it. But in that case, it's too far, too much, says Beis Hillel, to not take that out. So that Maaser Sheni, which is only Tamei Midrabanan, once it came in Yerushalayim, must still be eaten in Yerushalayim, even after it's deconsecrated. Maaser Sheni, Per Gimel, Mishnah Yud, 3:10. We've established that in the previous Mishnah, if Maaser Sheni becomes Tamei, it can be redeemed, and in normal circumstances, Beis Hillel, the halacha is that you could even take that deconsecrated food out of Yerushalayim. Our Mishnah here is going to consider not a Maaser Sheni food, meaning food that grew up, was originally a Maaser Sheni that was tithed from the produce, but rather food which is purchased with money that was used to redeem Maaser Sheni. So we'll call that, for argument's sake, secondary Maaser Sheni. So for my illustration here, we'll refer to the original Maaser Sheni as, say, a bottle of wine, because, of course, you have to take your Maaser Sheni on wine, and we'll use as my example from secondary Maaser Sheni, for example, where you take the wine, you deem it onto coins, you take the coins, Yerushalayim, and you use the money to purchase, let's say, a steak. So steak, of course, being meat, doesn't grow from the ground. It's not subject to Maaser Sheni requirements, no tithing requirements on steak, of course. But you could take the money from your wine that was Maaser Sheni and use it to purchase foodstuffs in Yerushalayim, like, for example, a steak. So the question is, we've established in the previous Mishnah that if the wine became Tamei in Yerushalayim, you could take it out again under the parameters of the previous Mishnah. This Mishnah considers, what about the steak? If the steak becomes Tamei, do you say, okay, so now let's redeem the money off the steak and we use the proceeds to buy a tuna fish sandwich, and this can keep on going and going and going, and the steak would be eaten as, you know, chulin? Or Rabbi Yehuda's shita is going to be in this Mishnah that the whole point of transferring from the original Maaser Sheni to coins and then from coins to purchase the secondary Maaser Sheni is only because it could be difficult to transport, let's say, the wine to Yerushalayim. So instead we say you can put the money into a coin and bring the coins to Yerushalayim. But once you've gone and taken those coins and purchased the steak with the Kedusha and transferred the Kedusha to the steak, that's the end of the mitzvah. The story's over. You've done what you had to do. And just the same way, if lightning strikes or a dog eats the steak, so then, you know, what's done is done. You can do nothing about it. If tumah strikes and makes the steak tame, so nothing to do about it. Just the mitzvah done and nothing more to be done. There's no possibility, says Rabbi Yehuda, of even transferring the Kedusha anymore off that steak onto another thing, let's say a tuna fish sandwich. But the halacha is like the Tanakama, as we'll see in a moment, which says, yes, you can. You can just keep on sort of like daisy chaining it from the wine, the original wine, to the steak. And if the steak becomes tummy from steak in Yerushalayim, that became tummy to tuna fish sandwich, etc., etc., etc. Okay, so the Mishnah says, halakuach bekesef maaser sheni, that which was purchased with maaser sheni money. So my story example, the steak, shenitma. If the steak becomes tamei, yipadeh, no problem, says the Tanakama, just redeem that steak, get the Kedusha back into coins, and buy another thing, the tuna fish sandwich. Rabbi Yehuda Omer yikaver, he says, no, you have to now bury that steak. The steak is inedible because it's Maaser Sheni that's tamei. You can't eat Maaser Sheni that's tamei. And there's no possibility, says Rabbi Yehuda, the Torah doesn't allow for an additional transfer from food that was purchased with Maaser Sheni out of Yerushalayim and brought to Yerushalayim food that was purchased with money that was achieved by redeeming Maaser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. The money is brought to Yerushalayim and purchases food there. The food now, that's the end of the story. There's no such thing as redeeming that food, even if it becomes tummy, and that's that. So now, the Tanakama will attempt to bring a kol v'chomer to Rabbi Yehuda to convince him that they're right. They say, Amru lo Rabbi Yehuda. They say, listen, Rabbi Yehuda, ma im Maaser Sheni atzmo. Consider Maaser Sheni itself, the original bottle of wine. Shenitma, if it becomes Tamei in Yerushalayim,
Harehu nipadeh, you're allowed to redeem it. And that's, you know, it's like, was born that way. It's like their primary Maaser Sheni. Halakuach b'kesef Maaser Sheni, that which you purchase with Maaser Sheni money, which is like, i.e. secondary Maaser Sheni, which is, of course, like, I'll call, these are my words, less intimately connected to its Kedusha. It's less intrinsic to it, perhaps. Shenitma, if that secondary thing becomes tameh, like the steak, eino din shipadeh, doesn't it stand to reason that it should be able to be redeemed? Meaning, if it's, you can get the Kedusha off the essential primary Maaser Sheni, for sure it should be able to be taken off the secondary. So he rejects that. Amar lahem lo. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, not necessarily. Because listen, im amartem b'maaser sheni atzmo, if you're talking about Maaser Sheni itself, shekenhu nifdeh b'tahor b'richok makom, you're allowed, l'chadchila, to not bring that bottle of wine to Yerushalayim. You can just redeem it onto a coin. No problem at all. So you see, it's like sort of easy to get the Kedusha off of the original Maaser Sheni. Which is not the case when it comes tomru b'lakuach b'kesef maaser. Would you apply the same logic to that which is purchased by the money for Maaser Sheni? Meaning, if you bought the stake not inside Yerushalayim but outside Yerushalayim, the din is she'eino nifdeh b'tahor b'richok makom. You're not allowed to now redeem that stake outside of Yerushalayim. So, meaning, you see that the kedusha of Maaser Sheni like sticks, is more stuck to secondary Maaser Sheni, if you will, outside of Yerushalayim, then primary Maaser Sheni. And that being the case, Rabbi Yehuda can deflect their kol v'chomer. Now, Rabbi Yehuda probably doesn't necessarily, he doesn't rely upon this, his logic, because he learns it's based on a pasuk. He's just pushing off their kol v'chomer. Now, it's a little strange in as much as the din that one can't redeem Kedusha off of secondary Maaser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim is a din derabanan l'chora, in which case it would be strange that Rabbi Yehuda is using that as a proof, because it's just a rabbinic rule, so it's strange to push off the question of the Raya's ability to redeem secondary Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. Therefore, the Rush says that Rabbi Yehuda must learn that that is a din d'oraisa to itself, that you may not, mid'oraisa, redeem secondary Maaser Sheni, that's tahor outside of Yerushalayim. You can look more, Tosfos, in Psachim, Lamed Ches, wrangles with this and suggests maybe he still holds it to Rabban, etc. But we'll leave it at that. The halacha is like the Tana Kama, which is that one, yes, can redeem Maaser Sheni and secondary Maaser Sheni, even tertiary, if it keeps on going in like a chain, doesn't matter, third, fourth, fifth stage, you can all redeem that again and again onto coins, even in Yerushalayim, provided that the Maaser Sheni or secondary, tertiary Maaser Sheni became Tamei. Maaser Sheni, Per Gimel Mishnah Yud Aleph, 3:11. Now we consider the purchasing of a meat, starting with a living animal, with Maaser Sheni money. Mishnah says, Tzvi shelakhu b'kesef Maaser Sheni, a gazelle that was purchased with Maaser Sheni money, we're talking here outside of Yerushalayim, umeis, and that gazelle, which you intended to bring to Yerushalayim and shecht over there and eat, it died along the way. So now there's nothing to do with this animal, because the animal was invested with Maaser Sheni Kedusha, and even if you get the Kedusha off it, all you have is an avail, is a carcass, which you can do nothing with besides feed to dogs. And that being the case, yikaver al yidei oro, you bury the entire gazelle inside its skin, the whole thing. Nothing can be used, it can be used for nothing. It's just a loss. Rabbi Shimon omer yipadeh. Rabbi Shimon says you may indeed redeem it and then reclaim the value and use the money to buy other foodstuffs, because he's not concerned that once deconsecrated, this is going to be fed to dogs. Big deal, he says. It's deconsecrated, it's nothing. But the Chacham, the Tanakama, hold that it's inappropriate to redeem something with Kedusha just to feed it to dogs. And the Lach is like the Tanakama. Lakhu chai v'shachatu v'nitma. What happens if you purchase it when it was alive, this gazelle, and then you shecht it, and then after shechting it, now it's food, it becomes tummy. So now that it's tummy, it's inedible, of course, because you can't eat Maaser Sheni when it's tummy. But if you redeem it, taking the Kedusha off of this meat, you'll have edible chulin, good old-fashioned venison, that's ready for consumption, just as chulin, and that's going to be okay. And that being the case, yipadeh, you're allowed to redeem it, says Tanakama, because here you're not feeding it to dogs. Rabbi Yossi omer yikaver. Rabbi Yossi holds, no, you can't. Rabbi Yossi holds, and this is really the same shita essentially we saw in the previous Mishnah, where Rabbi Yehuda said that the once Maaser Sheni, original Maaser Sheni that grew from the ground, has been, the Kedusha has been transferred to coins, and the coins have been used to buy foodstuff in Yerushalayim, that's the end of the mitzvah. There's nothing more to it. And if the food happens to become tummy as Maaser Sheni, secondary Maaser Sheni, nothing you can do. It's a loss. So Rabbi Yossi holds like that here too. So here you purchased the gazelle. It was turned into food when you shechted it. Then it became tummy. The mitzvah's over. Nothing you can do about it. Rabbi Yehuda happens to not agree on this point. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda, who held in the previous Mishnah that you only get one chance at transferring Kedushas Maaser Sheni money onto a foodstuff, he holds that doesn't apply when you buy a living animal outside of Yerushalayim. The reason, because the whole rationale behind the Torah's dispensation for converting Maaser Sheni to money was Richuk Makom, it's too far for you to schlep. And if the animal's alive, so then it schleps itself. So you haven't like harnessed that first rationale of deconsecrating for the sake of avoiding having to transport it, because it transports itself. And that being the case, we haven't like lapsed into phase two, the transferring onto money in Yerushalayim. Maaser Sheni, Per Gimel, Mishnah Yud Beis, 3:12. This Mishnah is a fairly challenging Mishnah, and I'm going to suggest that you learn it, number one, if at all possible, inside, meaning you have a text in front of you so you can follow what's happening. And even make notes if you can inside your text to keep track of what's happening here. And number two, I'm going to recommend that you learn this Mishnah with the next Mishnah in the same sitting, if possible, because they refer one to the other. The first case of the Mishnah is pretty straightforward. It says, Hamashal kankanim l'maaser sheni. If a person lends containers to store maaser sheni, it's already been declared maaser sheni, you're just putting it to be stored in some container. Afal pisha gafan, it doesn't matter. Even if you seal the container shut, like you cement them closed, so the container now is sort of like indefinitely, I'll call it a receptacle that contains Maaser Sheni, it doesn't matter, lo kana maaser. The container doesn't become subordinate, batel, to the Maaser Sheni, meaning that the value of the total container, liquid plus container together, is not considered when you redeem the Maaser Sheni. Rather, you just consider the value of the liquid inside the container. So that's the first case. It stands alone. It stands alone. This is the part one of the Mishnah. We can almost have like a new paragraph or even new Mishnah, so to speak, that if you're storing Maaser Sheni in a container, and it was Maaser Sheni before you put it in the container, and the container is just temporarily for use for that purpose, then when you redeem the sealed container, even if it's sealed, you only consider the value of the contents, the liquid inside, not the container also. Okay, that's part one. Part two, like a new paragraph, if you will. Zalaf lasochan stam. If you have containers and you pour into those containers stam. Stam means, without specific designation, but stam in this particular Mishnah means that what you're pouring inside the container is tevel, meaning it's just untied produce. And you're going to pour this untied, let's say, wine into the container, and later on you'll designate some of the, you have many containers of tevel, and you'll designate, for argument's sake, some of those containers to be the Maaser Sheni. So zalaf lasochan stam, if you pour tevel into these containers, ad shelo gafan, and you don't seal the containers, then lo kana maaser. Similarly, if you later come to redeem the contents of this container, which was subsequently declared Maaser Sheni, after you poured the tevel in, since the container is not sealed, it's just a temporary receptacle, and that being the case, when you consider the redemption price, the value you have to put out to redeem and deconsecrate this, let's say, wine in the container, you don't consider the value of the container itself, just the liquid inside. However, Misha Gafan, once you've sealed the container, meaning you first seal the container, it's holding tevel, and then you identify this container to be a Maaser Sheni container, the bottle of wine, and it's sealed, let's say, for argument's sake, and now you say that bottle, which was tevel, now is going to be the Maaser Sheni for the collection of bottles that you're tithing. So then kana maaser, at that point, the container also becomes part of the Maaser Sheni package, meaning now when you come to redeem the container of Maaser Sheni, you will include not just the value of the liquid, but also the value of the container in the redemption price. You may recall that we discussed this in the first parak, the fourth Mishnah. We differentiated this very case. We said it depends in terms of containers and whether you calculate the value of the container with the liquid. If it's normal to sell wine, let's say, in sealed containers, or if you sell it usually by the bucketful and people on tap, so to speak, people come and will get the wine on tap and they provide their own containers, etc.
if you have a question which this applies to here, the answer is we're talking in this Mishnah, we're talking about where it's normal to store wine in containers. But hold that thought. We'll come back to that a little more in the next Mishnah. In any case, the second part of the Mishnah simply said that if you pour tevel into a container and then you declare the contents of that tevel as Maaser Sheni, if the question is, when you redeem it, do you consider the value of the container or not? The answer is, it depends if you seal the container before or after you declare that tevel Maaser Sheni. If you seal the container before you declared it Maaser Sheni, and then you declared the whole container and its contents be Maaser Sheni, so then its contents and container together become Maaser Sheni in terms of the valuation. And if you first, prior to sealing the container, declare it to be Maaser Sheni, and then you seal the container, then you do not consider the value of the container when you come to redeem it. And the rationale is, I think, pretty intuitive. The idea is that if it's first sealed, you sort of declare this wine bottle, including both bottle and wine, to be Maaser Sheni, whereas if it's unsealed, you're just declaring the wine in the bottle to be Maaser Sheni, and that's that. And again, as far as the question of does this apply to locales where they sell wine in sealed containers or unsealed containers, as we discussed in the first parak, fourth Mishnah, the answer is this is really only going to apply, according to the Bar Tanura, in a locale where it's normal to sell wine in sealed containers. But hold that thought. We come back to that in the next Mishnah. Okay, now, the next part of the Mishnah is going further off topic. It's a similar case, but we're leaving the world of Maaser Sheni. So if you ask me, put a little line in your Mishnah here, writing that we're now lapsing to discuss the halachas of Truma. Truma, not Maaser Sheni at all. And when it comes to Truma, if you recall that the normal rules of Tarovas don't apply, if you have a mixture of chulin, regular food, and Truma food together, the normal rules don't apply. You need to have, if it's a min bamino mixture, the same kind of things like wine and wine mixing together, not the usual rove, or sometimes you need 60 if there's a mixture of tastes. What you need is 100 times. Actually, it's Machlokas, if you recall, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. If you need 100 times Heter, or just more than 99 times Heter, meaning does the total quantity of Chulin, if you have one unit of Truma, do you need a total of 100 and a bit, or do you need 101? The Halacha actually is 100 and a bit, but throughout the Masechta, we've always simply referred to it as 101. Let's stick to that for now. So, again, when it comes to Truma, you need to have not 100 times of Heter against it, you need to have not 60 times, but 100 times against it. The question is, if you have a container, and it has Trum inside of it, and it gets mixed up with other containers that have Chulin inside of it, so you have a bunch of containers, when is the container of Truma considered to be batel, that now you can eat from all the containers? And the Mishnah says, Achlo Gafan, if you have not yet sealed the container, which has the chulin inside of it. So you have, let's say, you have 101 containers. One of them has truma, 100 of them have chulin, and they're not sealed yet. Then olas be'echromea, that will be sufficient. We will look at it as if the 101 are commingled, and since you have 100 times of heter, regular food, against one component of iser, the truma that you can't eat, we will treat the 100 as being sufficient to annul the one, and that being the case, all 101 are permissible to a non-Kohen. Umisha gafan, but once you seal those containers, if you've sealed them, and then one unit of truma, one sealed container of truma, gets mingled up with 100 sealed units of chulin, so then, mekadshos b'chol shehein, that one sealed container of truma will render the entire mixture forbidden. That's what Makachos means over here. The whole mixture of 101 or even 1,000,001 containers all become forbidden. And the reason why is because certain things just aren't batel. We've already said that when it comes to Truma, we've upped it to 100 times against one. But there are certain things that, at least midrabanan, are considered to be too significant to be allowed to be batel. You might be familiar with things like hachaticha harui leschabed, a portion of meat big enough to serve as a whole, like a whole portion for a meal. That wouldn't be batel, for example, if you're familiar with that halacha. Or we have a beria, a whole living animal. So that means if a fly flies into the cholent, so we don't say, well, there's, 60 times of meat and potatoes against the fly and the chalons is mutter. No, we do not say that. As long as there's a whole unit of isser, a whole fly inside there, the whole chalons is forbidden. You got to get that fly out of there, no matter how many times you have of meat and potatoes against the fly. A whole fly is not batel, it's too significant as a beria. And another category of things on the list of devarim she'enem mispatlim, things that are never batel, is a davar shebe minyan, the kind of thing which is so significant that when you sell it by the count, one at a time. So that list exists in Orla, in the third parak Mishnah Zayin, things that are sold like that. One of them is chaviyos tumos, sealed barrels, and this is that case over here. Since when you seal a, you know, sell a bottle of wine, for argument's sake, or barrel of wine for that matter, you don't sell them by the pound or by the gallon, you sell them by individual units, bottle by bottle, or container by container, and that's the case over here. So since that's the case, the whole container can never be batel. So meaning, even if you had a million containers of chulin, and one bottle, one container of truma mixed in, you can't find which one's the truma, so then all million and one bottles become forbidden to a non-Kohen. What you'll have to do is you have to sell all a million and one to a Kohen, who will pay you just for the million. He doesn't pay you for the millionth and first, because that one is truma, it belongs to him anyways, but he pays you all the value of all the rest, and then that's that. But he, a Kohen, will have to eat all the containers in the mixture, because a davar shebe minyan, something as significant as a sealed container of wine, can never become batel. So that's what we said over here. Just the words one more time inside. Ach lo gafan, if you haven't yet sealed the containers, they're considered all as if they're open and sort of poured together. Then olus be'echad omea, then indeed 101 total units, meaning one of iser truma and 100 of chulin heter together would be sufficient to make the mixture permissible to non-kohen. U'mishe gafan, once you've sealed the container, and then it gets mixed in, that one container of truma, it will never be batel. That being the case, mekadshos, it renders the whole mixture to be forbidden, b'chol shehein, regardless of the ratio. And then you'll have to sell it to a Kohen, like I said, for the value of the total mixture minus the truma inside of it. Now, one more, like a new paragraph, if you will. We're still in the world of truma here, and we're considering when one has to take truma from a mixture, can he take truma, if the mixture is a bunch of containers, the containers are holding tevel, and they need to be tied, the truma needs to be removed from the mixture. So you'll take, you know, if you have 100 jugs, you're supposed to take, you know, 1/50th, meaning 2%, or, you know, 2 of the 100 jugs should be set aside as truma gadola. So the question is it okay for you to take, if you have 100 sealed containers, to take 2 of them and call them truma on behalf of the 100 sealed containers? And the reason why it's going to be a problem, as we'll see in the mission in a moment, is because you may recall from Maseches Trumos, we discussed it a little bit, and we'll get to Inchala a little more coming up, Ezra Hashem, that there's a requirement when you take truma that the all the things you're tithing together and taking truma on have to be minha mukaf. They have to all be like kind of close together in a single, close to one another, sufficiently close and commingled. And the Mishnah's point here is that sealed containers are like little islands to themselves, and if you have 100 sealed containers of tevel, they cannot, the liquid inside those sealed containers cannot be considered commingled with the other containers that are sealed, which would mean then, as the Mishnah will say, that you'd have to take truma from each and every bottle separately. So it would not be sufficient to take 2 of the 100 bottles and call them truma if they've been sealed already. The next Mishnah will consider, if you've gotten to this mess and now you have to, you know, it's obviously a massive pain in the neck to have to tithe 100 bottles individually. So what do you do? That'll be the next Mishnah. But here the Mishnah says inside, Achlo Gafan, if you haven't yet sealed these containers, let's say the 100 containers of Tevel, Torem Me'achas Al HaKol, you can take one bottle, or in the ratio that I gave, you need 2 containers, but you can take from an individual container on behalf of the whole mixture, let's say 50, u'mishe gafan, but once the containers have been sealed as tevel, so then Torah mikol achas v'achas, you'll be required to take truma samaisos from each and every bottle separately, because they're no longer considered to be minamukaf, so you can't take truma from them anymore. And like I said before, I suggest you follow on this Mishnah with the next Mishnah right now. Maaser Sheni, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Yud Gimel, 3:13. As I said in the previous Mishnah, this Mishnah and the previous should be learned together.
this one picks up exactly where the previous Yud Beis left off. Yud Beis had said that if you seal containers of Tevel, you no longer can take Truma from some of the containers on behalf of all the containers. Rather, you'll have to take Truma from each and every container separately because they're not considered min hamukaf. They're not considered to be sufficiently close together and aggregated. That being the case, the Mishnah picks up by saying, well, what happens if you don't want to do that? What happens if you find out the halacha and you realize, oh my goodness, it's quite a big job to tie the 100 containers separately. So how do you undo what you did? So Beis Shammai Omrim, Ben Shammai says, you can't just simply unseal the containers. You have to be mefateach, you have to open the containers up, unseal them from there that they've been sealed shut. And also, umaare lagas, you have to pour them back into the reservoir that was holding the pressed grape juice or wine prior to having bottled them into the separate containers. Ubeisil omrim, Beisil says, no, mefateach v'eno tzarech la'aros, it's sufficient to simply unseal the containers. No need to actually pour them back into the gas, into the cistern, into which the wine was being held originally. I mean, according to Beis Shammai, you would have to literally co-mingle the liquid, whereas Beis Hillel says, no, if you just unseal the containers, you're back to square one, and as long as the containers are not sealed, they're called min hamukaf, sufficiently close and aggregated, and that being the case, you could take, for 50 unsealed containers of Tevel, one of the 50 as Truma. That's the halacha. Now, if you recall, the previous Mishnah, the way we parsed it was quite disjointed. It was a number of separate topics altogether. We now return back to one of the topics that we had abandoned. So if you recall, we started out talking about Maaser Sheni in sealed containers. Then we lapsed into talking about taking Truma from sealed containers and Tarovis of Truma. Now, according to the Bar Tanura, we're going to go back to the topic we were discussing in Mishnah Yud Beis. In Mishnah Yud Beis, we had said that if you seal a container of Tevel and then call it Maaser Sheni, then the whole thing, including the container, becomes Maaser Sheni. Meaning, when you redeem the container of Maaser Sheni, the amount of value you have to put on the table of the coin, you know, you'll have to set aside onto the coin, must include not just the value of the liquid, but of the container and liquid together. So, the Mishnah says here, "Bemed devar mamurim." When does that apply? What's the that? The that is the second case of the previous Mishnah, where we said, if you pour tevel stam into a container, and then declare that tevel to be maaser sheni, if the container was not yet sealed, so then the container is not included in the calculations for how much money you have to put to redeem the container of, let's say, wine. But if the container was first sealed, the tevel's inside, container of the tevel sealed, and then you declare the inside to be Maaser Sheni, so then now included in the value of what must be redeemed is both the liquid inside and the container itself. And therefore, our Mishnah says here, B'med Devar Mamurim, in Mishnah Yud Gimel, when does it apply, that we said back then, but makam shadarkan lim kor stumos, in a place where it's normal to sell containers of sealed liquid, like say sealed containers of wine. That's when the wine could be considered to be both wine and bottle together. Meaning, just for argument's sake, just to give some numbers here, if the liquid's worth $9 and the actual container's worth $1, so if you want to redeem this bottle of wine, so if it's in a place where wine is sold in sealed containers, like the world we live in today, so then you have to put down $10, not just $9, ignoring anything about Chumash. So, but that only applies in a place where it's normal to purchase and sell wine in sealed containers. Avabamakum shadark and limkor psuchos, if it's the kind of place you're talking about where wine is not normally sold in sealed containers. It's sort of like, you know, the same when you go to the grocery store, you're supposed to bring your own plastic bag, and you have to pay for the plastic bags if they're not included in the price of what you're buying. Or maybe even a better metaphor would be when you go to the florist and you buy flowers and you get them inside a container. So if it's the little green foam container, maybe it's included in the price, and that's normal. But nobody sells you flowers inside a glass vase. When you buy the arrangement with the glass vase, you're paying for two separate things, the glass container as well as the flowers inside. So similarly, in a place where that's you buy wine. You don't buy wine with containers. You just buy the liquid itself. So then even if you had sealed the container and then declared the container's contents to be Maaser Sheni, still, when you redeem that sealed container, you only have to come up with $9, not $10. You don't include the value of the container itself. Okay. And the Mishnah said inside, Avol b'makom shedarkan limkor psuchos, if it's the kind of place where you normally sell wine on unsealed containers, you provide your own. Lo yatza kankan l'chulin, so then there's no need ever to have the container be deconsecrated. It never gets tied up with the Kedusha of Maaser Sheni in the first place. Fine. Now, according to the Bar Tanura, we're now going on to a new topic, like a totally new topic, new paragraph, new thought here. And the Mishnah says, like in a new topic all to itself, it's talking about a case where, according to the Bar Tanura, you go to Yerushalayim, it's even in a place where wine is normally sold in sealed containers, and you're buying wine in sealed containers, so then it would stand to reason you would include the value of the container when you redeem it, when you purchase it. But here, the case is where the seller is very particular and he sells you not by the unit, meaning you're not buying 3 bottles of wine. You're going to specifically ask for, I want 4.5 liters of wine. So he's selling you the wine by the liter and he's measuring it out. A little not intuitive for us because nowadays containers usually are standardized in terms of their size and contents, but the containers of the Mishnaic period were handmade. And therefore, they did not each contain precisely the same amount of liquid. And that being the case, we're talking about a scenario where, according to the Bar Tanura, the seller is selling you liquid based on volume, notwithstanding the fact that it's contained in containers. And that being the case, the containers are not going to be included in the calculations, as the Mishnah is inside. Avol im ratza lahachmir al atzmo limkor b'mida. If you're talking about a scenario where the salesman is selling you not just generically by the container, and getting a best guess of what the thing's worth, but actually he's selling it to you based on the actual exact volume of liquid or weight or measures of the liquid that he's selling you. Yatza kankan l'chulin. Similarly, the container is not included in the calculations. It automatically becomes chulin even if you don't pay for it. No need to redeem it. Fine. Now, according to the Bar Tanura, we have yet one new topic, another paragraph unrelated to the previous. Really, we're reflecting back on something we'd said in Mishnah Yud Beis. In Mishnah Yud Beis, we had said that if you seal the container and then declare it Maaser Sheni, the container gets dragged in to being also included in the subsequent value of the Maaser Sheni, meaning you include the container if you first seal it and then declare it to be Maaser Sheni. Here we're considering what happens if the guy who's the owner of the Maaser Sheni says, there's 2 liters of wine in this container. 1 liter I'm going to make Maaser Sheni, and the 2nd liter I'm going to keep as chulin, and I'm going to sell it to some other guy. And then you have that container, sealed off. So when he goes to sell that first liter of regular chulin, what's left behind afterwards is just a container of pure Maaser Sheni. So the question is, since he said that from the outset, is that good enough to now make, since he said he's only selling the liquid but retaining the container to be a repository or receptacle for holding Maaser Sheni, should now the container be included in the value and subordinate to the Maaser Sheni that remains behind, since that's what he said he was doing with the container? And the Mishnah is going to say no. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Afa Omer, it doesn't matter. If the guy says, Chavios zu ani mocher lecha, I'm selling you the contents of this barrel. However, I apologize. The Bar Tanura has a slightly different girsa here. He wants the girsa of this line of the Mishnah to be Reb Shimon Omer, Afa Omer lechavero, yayin ze, this wine that I'm selling you, ani mocher lecha, chutz mekankanim, but I'm excluding the container itself, meaning I'm selling to you chulin, liquid, but I'm retaining the kankan, the container, because I want to use it for storing Maaser Sheni. And therefore, Reb Shimon said, you might have thought, since you're designated the container to be specifically a Maaser Sheni receptacle, it should be subordinate to the Maaser Sheni and included in the value. However, nevertheless, he still says, yatza kankan l'chulin. He says, still, the container is not included in the value. In other words, Rabbi Shimon holds, as the Bar Tanura amends it, that in the previous Mishnah, when we said, if you declare the contents of the container when it's sealed to be Maaser Sheni, so then both the contents and the container itself become included as Maaser Sheni, meaning that the container is invested with the Kedushas of Maaser Sheni, that only applies, as Rabbi Shimon, here, where you declare the entire contents of the container to be Maaser Sheni. But if you have some of the container's contents be non-Maaser Sheni, even if you explicitly say that you're going to get ultimately sell that part of it so that you retain nothing but Maaser Sheni in this container, it doesn't matter. The liquid has Maaser Sheni Kedusha as appropriate, but the container is never considered subordinate since it wasn't done all at once to declare Maaser Sheni its contents. And that being the case, when you redeem it, you just pay the value for the liquid inside, and the container will automatically then be free to be used without any need to consider the value of it in terms of redemption of Maaser Sheni.